Hello, cyclocross friends, and welcome to episode 82 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show, we have the Bear Development U23 men's team, or seven members of them, the most people who have ever been on Crosshairs Radio at one time. So we had to break it down into two separate panels. So we'll have a panel of four of the guys to start out with, and then we'll move on and have our second panel of three more. If you listen to episode 81 with Ellen Noble, you can hear these guys come in during that episode. And then Ellen stuck around and helped me with the conversation for this show as well. So this is Bear Development with former Bear Development racer Ellen Noble and co-host. But before we get to that, we have to take care of some business. And I can tell you, starting off, that it right now is 11:24 on Sunday night. Tomorrow I'm heading off to Italy for the final round of the Mountain Bike World Cup in Val di Sole. But I was planning on doing the intro of this podcast, and I wanted to bone up on some of the wide angle podium shows to tell you about, so that to entice you to become a member of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network. This is August. This is our donor drive. We're trying to add 200 new members, and we want everyone out there who's listening to this show to consider becoming a member, as low as $5 a month, on up to $50 a month, or whatever you want to give, because it helps us run the network. It helps us bring you some amazing shows. We got to hang out. I know I talked about them last time, but they got Corinne Tucker. That's just Slater Kinney. Oh, it just blows my mind. I mean, A-list stuff. But I was going through the most recent shows, and I saw that the consummate athlete was talking to Jacques DeVore. Wasn't really familiar with who he was. He is an author and a coach. He has a new book called Maximum Overload for Cyclists. And I clicked on the consummate athlete link because they were interviewing him, and I saw that it was about strength training, and that's something that's near and dear to my heart. And I just got into it, and it's like an hour later, and I was like, man, that was an awesome conversation. I was just gonna like skim through, listen a little bit, get some tidbits for you all to make sure that you went over and checked out the Consummate Athlete show, because that's still in my queue and I hadn't gotten a chance to listen to it. And then I just listened to the whole show because it was great, and I love the stuff that he was talking about. And I think it is something that you all will enjoy as well. Molly and Peter did a great job having a conversation with Jacques DeVore, and it's the type of thing that you get on the network. It's a surprise to me. It's going to be a surprise to you as well. All of the shows, Slow Ride Podcast, Bike Shop CX, you know, you have to support them. They have a new logo now. It actually looks nicer. So that's right there is worth a membership. Dirtfield Recordings, come on. We got a new member of the Dirtfield Recordings team on the way. Lindsay Bear is going to be a mom. I mean, that's worth becoming a member for. Man, that's sort of, I don't know. Is that a low blow? Nah, what the heck? Go support Lindsay and her future child by becoming a member of the of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network / donate. Already talked about we got to hang out. Oh, they're just killing it. Just absolutely killing it. Honest Bicycle Program. I just put up a Kids Don't Follow episode. I went through some of the stuff that I'm listening to, especially when making these trips over to Europe. It's very rap and hip-hop heavy, but it's I put an album's worth of stuff that I'm really digging, and I hope you go check out that show as well. If you do decide to become a member of the network, it's not going to go unnoticed. We're going to send you swag. Become a member, you get a bottle. Everybody gets a Wide Angle Podium bottle. If you move up to, let's say, the $15 per month level, that's where the fun stuff starts to happen. You get a fidget spinner. Yep, fidget spinners. There aren't. Pretty sweet. I need to hit Spencer up to make sure I get mine. You know, I'm a member. I donate above $15 a month. I want my damn fidget spinner. $20 a month to get a fidget spinner. Also a brand new design on Wide Angle Podium t-shirt. That's pretty cool. Those are worth checking out as well. $35 per month, you get a whole slew of stuff. Two bottles, fidget spinners, yearly t-shirts, sticker packs. What I'm saying is right now, we have close to 1 million downloads. 1 million downloads. Having all of those people access our network and download podcasts is just simply the best, but it costs a lot of money, and we need to make sure that we can afford to pay for that, and that's where we're looking to you. When I have Mr. David Powell and Scott Diedenbach on the show, we average 10,000 downloads. It can go up even more than that or a little lower. Those are the They Don't Do That in Europe shows. I can tell you a small fraction of that 10,000 are actually Wide Angle Podium members. It doesn't take a lot. $5 a month isn't going to kill you. It's not going to break the bank. I think we are offering you a lot of good, solid entertainment and knowledge that's worth that money. So help us out, and then we'll continue to bring you those shows. All right. WideAnglePodium.com/donate. Part two of the business. I know you know what it is. It's our long-time sponsor, Health IQ. Health IQ is going to get you special rates. You could say even exclusive rates, lower rates on life insurance, but you first have to qualify. How you qualify is you go to healthiq.com/cxhairs. You take a quiz. If you score well on the quiz, you're going to score well on the quiz. They will know that you are serious about being a cyclist, that you know your stuff, that you are probably somebody who is concerned with fitness and staying in shape, and that's the type of people that they want to help. They have a unique mortality model. That is the Health IQ Advantage, and it's based on the health conscious, and they have lower rates for health conscious people. So it's a unique system. It's replacing BMI with waist to hip ratio. It's doing different cholesterol calculations. They're not like your standard traditional life insurance company. They figured out a way that they can offer lower rates to people who qualify with healthy lifestyles. And they're not doing this. They're not altruists. You know what I mean? Yeah, they want to support this, but at the same time, they know that you're a better risk for them and they want to invest in you. So that's kind of the trade-off here. So it's a win-win on both sides. So go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, take the quiz, chat with them for a bit, get a lower rate on your life insurance, and feel good about yourself. Feel good that you're supporting the show that way too. But mainly support the show by going to wideanglepodium.com/donate. Bear Development Team, all seven of them. We're starting with our first panel of four, me and Ellen Noble, and we're doing it right now.
All right, this will be the easy part. Let's just go down the line and introduce the four of you, so, and then that way people will kind of know. Yeah, squeeze together on the couch. Pretend like you know each other. You've spent time with
We're
each other.
Right?
Yes.
All right. You're up.
Hi, I'm Sandy Florin, and I race with the Bear Development Team, and I'm here at Monson Ann World Cup with USA Cycling.
That was awesome. Follow suit.
My name's Stefan Anderson. I'm 20 years old. It's my second year as a U23, and I race for the Bear Development Team.
Carson Beckett, also second year. And just stoked to be out here at Mount St. Anne.
Daniel Johnson, also second year, and we've been on the road for 3 weeks, and this is a World Cup time, so it should be awesome.
What, Nationals, Boston, and then here? Is that how this trip has gone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wyndham.
And Wyndham.
Wyndham to cap it off.
Okay. How's it been so far?
It's been pretty good. We've been having a really good time traveling around the East Coast, getting a feel for the scene over here and the different kind of terrain, at least for three of us who are from the West Coast. Carson's from the East Coast, so he kind of knows how to ride this stuff.
Have you been teaching him about roots and rocks and stuff?
I'm not.
So much.
Not really. More of just like, I don't know, the only one without a dropper right now. So it's kind of whatever. But no, it's been fun. It's good. And me and Sandy came back from the second round of the World Cups, a week before Nationals. So it's been like basically June or late July through August has been pretty crazy.
So that was Andorra, Lenzerheide.
Yeah.
How would you compare what's comparable? I would say Andorra to what we see today is probably
definitely closest. Probably Andorra if it had more rocks. I don't know.
Although it's got that one chute before you make the gravel climb back up.
Exactly.
That seemed like it was rough. I just have to walk down these things and they seem tough.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's harder
to walk. I think this course is dramatically harder than Andorra.
Yeah.
Than most of the World Cups, I think, honestly. I think it takes a full body experience to get something done. So
having to travel overseas for these other World Cups. Now we got a North American World Cups, plus you have Nationals, which is, I mean, not as technical as this, but definitely same conditions. Do you think that prepares you well for this week?
Yeah, I think, we were just watching the downhill live, actually, and Aaron took it, and some very similar conditions on how snowshoe was. So I think that prepares us a little bit I wouldn't say better than most, but it definitely prepares us for how this weekend is going to be.
Yeah.
Just try to stay upright, do a good race, push on the uphills, and see how we go. So I think it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, I was like, I could have stayed over there, and I was like, not really getting paid to cover downhill. I don't know if I want to go stand out in the rain. So I was watching it here. That's amazing that he won, because it seemed like everybody was getting slower with the rain.
Yeah.
That's a good result. Tell me about the Bear development team a little bit, or as I like to call it, the Beard development team. That's the one I could be on.
It's a Bear development team is a U23 as well as a junior team. We have a pretty big amount of kids this year. It's a very large team with a focus of developing athletes all around our nation. We have athletes basically all around our nation. It's mainly based out of Marin County, California, a little bit north of San Francisco, and basically it's focused on trying to produce young talent that they see in the NICA series, really, and all over, and then bring them to these like a little bit larger of a races, Pro XCTs, and if they really want to, bring them into World Cups and basically build them up, get them faster, and while having a lot of fun. I think that's the main thing that Bear really focuses on is.
Bears, they're, it's important that you're fast and committed to self-improvement through cycling, but ultimately it's all about the community experience of, a lot of people who share the common interest, but also share a positive attitude and don't take themselves too seriously the way that some other, like, really more intense programs might do.
But you're still, I like that, and I like that approach, but it's that balance between being serious about, people are spending money on you to do this, yet not having to take yourselves too seriously. I think that's always a good balance to find. Yeah. That just left my head fast. Starting in racing, did all of you all come up? Was mountain biking like the thing, or would it start on road, or how did you get into actually cycling and then racing?
I personally started through the NorCal League, which is one of the National Interscholastic Cycling Association leagues, and I think Did you guys all do that too?
I started racing BMX at 8 years old. So,
oh, nice.
And then switched to mountain biking.
Where were you? Where were you doing that?
The Orange Y, Southern California.
Okay.
Four nights a week. So that was always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's the transition like from BMX to cross country?
Well, compared to rocks and roots, it's not the same.
Yeah.
I mean, the pump track sessions are fun, but it's way different. It takes a while to get used to the different handling.
Nice. Ellen, jump in here. What you got?
I don't know. I was trying to think of a cheeky way to bring up that I too was on the Bear development team and ask a funny question, but I was going to ask who their favorite teammate was, but I was actually on there long before their time, so that question would have kind of fallen in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I remember when you raised Bear Creek, weren't you on that team then?
What was Bear Creek?
In Pennsylvania?
Oh, yeah. That was my year.
Yeah.
Oh, we had such a great team back then, and I think the team's continued to grow. So I love watching from social media and seeing you all continue with Bear.
This year, Julia Violich, the head chief mom of the team, basically, I think she's done a pretty good job at crafting, a good development team like we were talking about. Because the juniors are pretty relaxed on the team and they have a lot of fun. But I think when you cross that line into U23, I've noticed, like, we all definitely love it and enjoy it. That's why we're here. But it's kind of taken on a little more serious tone. Like, this is sort of we're getting to those next steps.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those U23, we'll see it out here again. But, you look at those European rounds. I mean, those are pro races that y'all are in the middle of. And that's, I mean, what's the, just from racing like local to go into that, I mean, what's the difference? What's the sort of, what are the stories behind you sort of making that jump? And
yeah, the European U23 races are way more intense than the local pro races. They're, even though it's a younger field, everyone in that whole field is really, really aggressive and, going for it. In Europe, they take the sport a little bit more seriously than they do in the States. So, yeah, you really notice that at the start, especially when people just go ballistic trying to get to the single track first.
Is it aggressive to the point that you feel like you almost have to state your claim to a spot, or people aren't respecting you because they don't know who you are? I mean, I hear that I cover cyclocross mainly. Right. That's kind of the thing.
Yeah.
And always hear that from guys going over and racing in Europe, that if they don't know you, it's like you get zero respect and you got to sort of, fight your way through. Is that sort of the same vibe in these mountain bike races?
Well, there's like 160 people at some of these races.
Yeah.
So, and then you start, if you're starting near the back, there's really no respect
at all. For 140 of them, everyone's within 5% of,
no one knows anyone.
So,
right.
Yeah, not much ground is really
made. And especially these races, it seems like that first bottleneck comes pretty fast in
Real
there.
Fast,
and
yeah.
then it gets, strung out right at the beginning. So is that, are you all in danger of, are you finishing races? I guess that's the question. Or is there an 80% rule that's coming into play in those races?
I know for my World Cups, it's definitely been really close. I haven't done I haven't finished on the lead lap yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I definitely think strength is an issue. But and not to make excuses, but starting 100th.
Oh no, you
is,
can't.
You
can't
minutes.
Win.
Yeah.
You could be the strongest rider out there, and you're only going to get it so far in the amount of time
your
races.
For me, it's been basically limiting my losses during the race, and just trying to get as close to the time cut as I can. So,
what would be your strategy with that? Starting 100th is actually something that I've never experienced. That's a lie. I think I've started 100th once, maybe twice. When they had a full crazy nationals, when anyone and their sister could race nationals, back in Wisconsin, I think I started 100th out of 110 or something.
Yeah.
But that was many years ago. That's not my reality all the time. So what would be your strategy for a race like that? Do you go out hot? Do you kind of ease into it?
Yeah, the only strategy really is to not have one, except you know, go as hard as you possibly can from the start and mm-hmm. take every risk you can to get as many places up as you can.
Yeah, and hope the check engine light doesn't come on later.
Definitely not.
I mean, well, like, no, I mean, you end up walking, like, 3 minutes into the race anyway.
Oh. Yeah.
And then people around you are, you know, just, like, climbing over each other and there's bikes going everywhere.
Was it Albstadt?
Yeah.
That tree right before the flyover, that little drop down, that seemed like Danielle's race was insane.
Andorra was okay, and Linzerheide was pretty bad too. It was like
we all walked the first descent.
2.5 minutes of a road climb, and then 160 of us went into like one single track descent.
Why am I blanking on Linzerheide?
It was like a double track up and then like a slalom
section. Oh,
trees.
Down into the roots.
I mean, it was just like, I remember like walking and like, I think I picked up a bottle off the ground because it was like in the way.
Yeah, I was standing still for a while.
Well, and if you start 110th, I mean, if you take like a second to like breathe or something like that, you're going to go back to 160th.
Yeah.
So you can't like.
Yeah, it's just as hard back there.
Because that's the thing, it's a huge field, but it's also an incredibly strong field. And even the guys at the back are really, really fit and very fast at the start.
So what's the, when you go over there then and you're starting back there, I may have already asked this, or even for the season, I mean, what's the objective in the season? What's your, you know, what's your goals going forward in doing this?
Well, I don't want to speak for these guys, but for me personally, I'm still pretty new to the whole UCI style of racing, that scene. So I'm just trying to, I've been focusing a lot on my training and getting better through that, but also just trying to get as much race experience as I can and talk to people who know more than me and, you know, maybe have some kind of inside tip or, you know, just follow wheels that are more experienced than I am.
Yeah. Is that about the same for you guys? Or?
I think gaining points, like, in a variety of different races is really important, trying to move up, because when we come to these races, I mean, we hope to start up as far as possible. I mean, I know there's not as many people at this race. It's not as deep as the field as when we go over the pond, but like starting, I think our teammate Luke is starting 14th place.
Right.
And that's a little, I mean, I would love to start up there.
Yeah.
In second row, it's real nice.
It's kind of, I know, like everyone hunts these points, you know, because it's really not possible to race in a race without points. It's like, otherwise you're just riding. But I don't know, I think for U.S. racing, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because to hunt these points in the spring, we go to races where we're racing on, like, kitty litter. And so, yeah, you may be getting points, but you're getting no experience.
Right, like, sure.
For European makes complete racing sense. Anyway.
Yeah.
So it's like, you kind of have to fight that balance, choose what races you go to, choose your goals, and, like, maybe give up points at one race to go to Canada instead and get better handling.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Yeah, did all of y'all do those Canadian Canada Cup races? Those look pretty good.
Yeah, I loved Bay St. Paul and Mount Tremblant. I also was able to do Bear Mountain early in the season before Benelli Park. I wasn't able to do the Ontario ones. I also did Whistler, and they're great. I mean, you go out to those, and there's a lot more spectators. The venues are crazy. Good technical, lots of climbing. I think it really sets the riders up for more of a World Cup kind of scene, which I like a lot more.
Yeah, I think that approach is amazing too, like that USA Cycling is bringing these riders to these harder races. And as you were saying, like, it doesn't really, may not get you the points, but it's really great because it's going to make you a better rider. And I think that's something that we see a lot in cyclocross, is people who find these like small C2s. You get so many points, and then like you could show up, like you could literally show up and start second row at a World Cup,
right?
Having never raced a World Cup,
yeah.
Are you gonna finish second row? Are you gonna finish in the top 15? Probably not. And so like it gives you like this like super weird like inflated point system, and I don't think that it's always representative. So I think like focusing on becoming a good rider, so like, when you do get those points, it's less of like a drastic finishing position and starting position.
With cyclocross, we'll even get the thing where you'll get these European racers who will come over to the U.S. for the first part of the season and just try to, like, you know, pile up as many.
And Bosemans did
pile in and go to China, go to the U.S., get as many points as they can so they can get up here in front.
Yeah, last weekend at Boston, at the Boston Rebellion, the entire front row was almost completely taken up by guys from Costa Rica. None of us have ever heard of any of these guys, but they have tons of UCI points from their, like, national series, maybe, or maybe
AC races.
Yeah, they must.
Oh man. Yeah.
And so they all are at the front, and, you know, go really hard off the line from the gun and get to the single track first. And then they're all on, like, hardtails, and this is a really rough course where you would not want to ride a hardtail.
Boston.
And they're just, like, they're just flying all over the place. And, oh, man.
That looked like a good race. It looked like a good crowd, good,
Yeah, they put on a really good event.
Yeah. That's great. So doing all this other, I mean, you're talking about starting 160 and all that kind of stuff. Then how does that must translate well when you come back home and do nationals? I mean, you got to feel like you're pretty confident going into that race.
Definitely.
I was gonna say, I mean, once you come back to the U.S. you pretty much know where you are or where you think you should be with the speed you've been racing, because, like, all of us in U23 have been racing together for 4 years or so now. It's like we all kind of know each other and where we fit in, and it's like, so it makes for interesting racing, I guess, you know, for actual racing, not just running through people.
Yeah. So what is in store for you all life-wise? I mean, you have this now, you spend a ton of time racing. Is this it? Is everybody trying to move up to the next level? Or is it like, you know, what's the balance? What's the cycling versus life balance?
I mean,
it's a tough one to want to answer. Right?
No, I mean, just got heavy very quickly.
I know the reality is it's not a prosperous thing. So for the amount of work of years worth of work we put into it. So yeah, I am trying to make the next step for sure. And I'd be interested in anything that comes my way. But I'm also going to school and planning on majoring in exercise science. So, you know, we'll see what I can turn into with that. So I'm definitely not putting 100% of my worth on this.
Yeah.
So.
One of the things that Ellen and I were talking about earlier is just the sort of the thing with being an American racing, not American just nationality, but just geographically being in the U.S. And it's something that, I mean, it almost... And I wonder if it's the same for mountain biking, if you relocate to Europe, if you spend time in Europe, if you do that, maybe a European team. I mean, is that something that y'all think about or would consider doing?
I've thought about it. Like, not like I've thought about it, like I've thought about doing it. But I've thought about how it would change my racing. Specifically, a lot of the European countries, like, you know, Germany, Switzerland, France, they'll all have a national series, and all those countries are so close to each other that you can kind of go between them and do a lot more really high level racing in a much smaller area than you can when you're here or when you're in the US and the races are spread out over a huge geographic area. So if I ever take a break from school, it might be something worth considering if I could maybe find some people who wanna do that for a few months. It could probably be a pretty good experience. But ultimately, I can't see myself relocating there with any kind of permanence.
Yeah. I mean, that's the type of thing that I think people outside of the U.S. don't realize. I mean, we're seeing it right there, you know, just East Coast versus West Coast, and there's so much space. We always look at, again, you know, going back, we look at this, it's like four countries, you know, each corner of the U.S. is almost as its own Europe, so
like
it's hard to put
the
all together.
Map, like they just took Belgium and they just fit it into the map of the U.S. and they're like, we could fit 11 Belgium. That's probably totally grossly over-exaggerating, but like, we can fit so many Belgiums.
Oh, it's not even like the size of it. It's like Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's so small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It's
also
so
really taxing. Traveling out over there and staying over there, it can be very lonely. I mean, we've had mentors talk to us about their experience being over there and living in Europe and racing for European teams, and they say it can be lonely when you don't know the language fluently.
Yeah.
And you're just there training day in and day out, and you're not seeing your friends, your hometown friends, your family and everything for so long. It can be pretty taxing on you.
Yeah.
So.
You see the same thing with a lot of the guys who live in the Southern Hemisphere, like in Australia, where they'll have their national series in their summer, which is like December or January, and then for the main race season, which is the Northern Hemisphere's summer, they have to fly to Europe and just spend an incredible amount of time away from home, and that's got to be pretty tough.
Yeah. All right, we're getting this on a positive note now. when you're not mountain biking, what are you doing? What do y'all spend your time on?
I really like to play music.
Yeah?
Yeah, like the guitar and the piano.
Nice.
And, you know, drawing or painting.
Well-rounded. That's
good. Any kind of creative thing.
It's good for an athlete. So those three guys are like, uh-oh.
What about you?
Sweet. Yeah. All right.
I try to hang out with, like, friends and family.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm around these guys so much that we all know each other really well and we get along really, really well. So I'm usually hanging out with them. I'm living with a teammate right now, and that's working out really good for me. I'll probably go home, hang out, try to relax, see friends and family. I'll try to get a little bit more surfing in the off season. I haven't done that in a long time. So.
Very cool. All right, you're ending us off.
Do you want to go, Danny?
Yeah, I play, skiing and other stuff in the winter is good. Fat bike. Anything.
Where do you live that you can fat bike?
Durango.
Colorado. Oh, okay. I thought you were in California. I was skeptical.
yeah. I don't know. When I get back, especially from like this trip, it's just gonna be anything I can do not on two wheels. Just go outside and do something else. Enjoy the time that we're not focused on solely going fast on a bike. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you all for taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
All right, that was panel number one. Great to hear from those guys during this little break between one and two. I'm gonna once again remind you about the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network Donor Drive taking place in this month of August. Go to wideanglepodium.com/donate, become a member, get cool stuff, and feel better about yourself, and I'll feel better about you. Also, healthiq.com/CXAirs. They're going to get you lower rates on life insurance. healthiq.com/CXAirs. Hey, if you want to get in contact with me, feedback@CXAirs.com. It's really easy. You can also call our hotline, 405 CX Hairs, and follow along on Twitter and Instagram @CXHairs. Okay, enough of the intermission. Let's get back to the show. Here we are. Panel number two, Ellen Noble, still there. I'm still there. Three more Bear Development guys. Let's hear from them now.
Is this a live video?
Yeah, live video.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my God.
All right.
So we're live here with CX Hairs.
Yeah, yeah, we are. This is panel number two. I'm already recording, so.
Sweet.
Oh, nice.
Three men panel this time.
You.
I know. but you all get to start by introducing yourselves, telling, you know, name, where you're from, age, all that good stuff.
Okay, I'll start. My name is Luke Rauenvelder. I'm 22. I'm from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Just graduated from UNC Chapel Hill, and now I'm racing bikes for Bear full-time, pretty much. So.
Awesome.
And I'm Jerry Dufour, originally from Birmingham, Alabama. Just recently moved to California. Just racing bikes and having fun. Long nice. Story short.
I'm Eli Cranefuss from Mill Valley, just outside of San Francisco. Also racing for Bear Development. And yeah, racing bikes, going to school in Colorado now, having a good time.
Okay, here's my first question. This is actually just for me. Say the last name again.
Vrouwenvelder.
I got it now.
I never would have guessed that. You were like, pronounce Lou's last name. I would have been like,
it's actually like if you
now
down,
that I see yeah. it and I hear it, it all makes sense.
Yeah, it used to work in like three letter pieces, yeah. and then you say each one. Yeah.
And you shaved.
When you had to learn how to pronounce.
Yeah, it. You see that.
But Matt, you could have been Matt's twin before.
Dude, his looks a lot better than mine. I'm gonna be honest. He's talking about the mustache, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, the mustache.
See, that's what we were talking about last night when I was saying that people who can't grow facial hair should not.
Well,
and
I can grow it.
My joke
look
is,
good.
If I can grow a better mustache than you, you should not have a mustache. So.
That's
the rule.
That was a good one.
All right.
I was over there with the zingers.
Yeah, well, that's why she's here. She's here to help out with this, this talk. So... pretty much winding down the mountain bike season. Yeah, we've got like Wyndham after this.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Well, one or two. Hopefully Worlds.
Time will tell.
Oh, Worlds, of course.
Right. We're all kind of waiting for that.
Have you figured out, talk to me about getting to Worlds and what that's going to take. That seems like, I just know being in this house and the discussions about which bikes and how to get bikes and all that kind of stuff to Cairns is like, It seems like a huge hassle.
Well, it's a little simpler for us because I only have one bike. So
yeah, that works.
I think getting to Worlds and getting to Worlds is two different things.
Yeah, so we have to get on the team to go to Worlds before we can worry about getting
to Worlds.
This is true,
because Mark Gullickson's here.
That's right.
Wandering around. He's in charge for USA Cycling to figure out who goes. So what is this is all of you Bear Development team, so you're all sort of the same team, yet this is something we didn't really talk about with these guys. You're kind of competing against each other as well, especially Nationals, and I'd assume this week, because those are the two races that Gullickson's at, so he's getting a really good look at everyone. How does that play out?
The way I see it, when we're traveling as a team, we're having a great time, usually crammed in some hotel rooms, get to know each other pretty well, but once you're on the start line, and I guess at the start line you're still a team, then once the race starts it's kind of a free-for-all. You respect your teammates, but
I was gonna say during a World Cup I don't think that there's really, I don't feel competitive with them really at all, because we're all kind of stratified into our little levels.
Yeah, well, you're up higher than they are.
Well, I don't
you're
know.
You're racing different guys.
I don't know.
I'll say it.
Well, we kind of do have some inclination as to where we'll fall in the race. And during a World Cup, the time gaps between us are big enough that there are five or six other guys between us. So it's not really like we're racing each other so much as we're racing still foreigners. And if, you know, Jerry comes up on my left, I'm definitely not chopping Jerry.
Right.
I'm letting Jerry by.
Same here.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I think
Jerry's not chopping Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry's not chopping Jerry. But there is definitely some level of camaraderie between us that is not like, you know, it's not cutthroat, that's for sure.
Well, it's what I was talking to the other group about, especially being from North America going over to Europe. And I mean, they made a good point. There's 160 people there. It's a little different. I look at it from the cyclocross world in that, if people don't know you, they don't respect you. So it's like there are guys over there that are going to chop you, that are going to do things because they don't care about you and they don't know you. So that's a good point that, you know, even though you might be competing against each other, it's more like a respect thing that you're not going to do anything that's going to harm their chances. Tell me some of the, sort of your best experiences from the World Cup season. What sticks out? What race?
Modesto for sure. That was the best one. That's one of the best courses I've like ever raced on an international scene.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah, Modesto was definitely one of the best courses I've ridden. The crowd.
The crowds.
That
sick.
First climb
that was so
was
great.
Like, came up and my ears were ringing.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that's happened to me. And just the course by itself, pre-riding the days before, it was just like, you know, we're having fun.
Yeah.
So that was a plus.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've noticed. I mean, when I'm just out there for practice rounds, it seems like you guys are always having fun out there riding around, at least, yeah. You know, which is good.
That's the idea. If I didn't have fun doing this, I probably wouldn't be doing it, so.
Yeah. What
you do it for the money, don't you?
Yeah, for the money. I was gonna say there aren't a lot of other aspects that are really contributing. So,
how was it? You know, maybe you can speak to this. You had a good nationals race. How was it just coming from these World Cup races, and how did that prepare you for coming back home? And obviously, you're racing. You know, Blevins, another guy who's been out there at all the World Cups, but overall field, it must give you. I mean, for all of you, it must give you a little bit of a confidence boost coming back home and racing that race.
Yeah, it's a little different race in the U.S. Sometimes our courses are like Mammoth last year. It's straight up, straight down at 9,000 feet, which is a totally different ball game. There, I'm going to suffer any day of the week, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, racing in West Virginia is a lot more fun. It's actually a course that I can get behind. So, but yeah, other than that, we kind of know who's who. In the U23 field, you know, there are always a couple riders that have a great showing, you know, right out of their skin, so to say. But for the most part, I think we kind of know, you know, who to watch out for and who to race with. So I think from that perspective, I knew exactly what I was up against coming into the race. And I knew Chris was going to come out strong. He's been riding strong all season. Yeah. It's hard to deny that. So my tactic was racing Chris, and I ended up racing Chris, thankfully. I wish I had won, but
yeah,
Chris wanted to win too. So
what's it like being a East Coast guy on a team with all these West Coast guys?
He's not so bad, actually. The one of the last guys you had, Carson.
Yeah,
he's a East Coaster,
right? Yeah,
Gary's actually East Coaster too.
I guess so, yeah.
So we've got a pretty solid show.
That's a change for this team, though. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it is a West Coast based team.
Yeah, I mean, started in California years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Bear development. I think I was like the first East
you were
Coast
the,
rider.
Yeah, and you were the outlier.
Why are you here? And I was like, yeah. Okay, that's a little rude, but I'm on the team.
I guess my question to all of us is, this is going to be the deep question of the day, but it's really like, what do you expect to get out of like a development team? What's the goal? What's the goal in your mountain biking career?
I would say that I'm pretty close to achieving what I wanted out of this team. I came in pretty much as a privateer, very unsupported. And Julia, thankfully, I talked to her at Nationals last year, and she was like, "Even though you're a last year U23, we're gonna, you know, send you next year." And having the support has been. I mean, it doesn't, like, always make a huge difference, but having it consistently is so huge. So, like, I show up to a race and I'm not juggling, like, sleeping in the back of a truck and finding a tire in some
right.
like, garbage bin or something.
Yeah.
Like, it changes your
Oh, man,
game,
speaking of garbage, sure. Where was, Lenzerheide, because we're down in the downhill pits. And just the...
They throw everything away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, dude,
I was filming the Garz gang because it was just like just filled with rubber. I mean, the whole thing was just tires.
That stuff's good, too.
Yeah.
Just not race ready.
Yeah, it was hilarious. I was like...
That depends on who you ask. Race ready is relative.
Yeah, I race a lot of questionable things, so it's probably race ready. But yeah, so I mean, I've had a pretty good season so far. I mean, at least compared to last season.
Yeah.
And I set myself up, I think, pretty much to the best of my ability to launch off of Bear into a bigger team or, you know, an elite team next year. Not necessarily bigger because Bear's got a lot of riders. but yeah, to a team that supports elite riders. So keep my fingers crossed.
Jerry, talk to me about mountain biking in Alabama coming up doing that. How'd you get into it?
Started out just my dad and I. He did it when he was younger. But, you know, I left Alabama probably 2 years ago, and NICA had just started there. And since that, it has grown so much. And that's something that's really cool to see. I mean, when I was racing, it was me and, like, you know, two other dudes out there racing, but no one quite, you know, what level we are. But now you see NICA, and you see there was... probably 30 kids at nationals from Alabama.
Oh, that's insane. Yeah, that's insane. That's so great. Yeah.
So you have a huge interest, and then you even have it. It gathers a group of people that have even an interest that we have, which is awesome to see. So, the mountain bike in Alabama, first off, the trails are great.
Yeah.
Oak Mountain State Park is listed one of the top trails in the area. There was actually a Pro XCT there a couple of years back.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Great riding, and seeing the growth there is awesome. So.
Yeah, that's like I live in D.C., and Nika is something that I think there might be some in Virginia and maybe mm-hmm. a little bit in Maryland, but it's not that big yet. Yeah. And it's something that I find really cool because it's getting kids in starting in mountain biking. And it's sort of this, you know, it's always been there, but it's almost more of a push than you see kids starting in road or even, you yeah. know, we get them in cyclocross, but there's not that Scholastic tie-in with it. Is that, did all, were all of you?
Yeah, I'd actually really like to touch on that because yeah. I did the backwards thing because I hate making money or something. Used to race on the road and then started doing mountain biking. Was on the road development team.
Yeah.
And Nika in California, it started in California. Probably just a couple of towns from where I'm from. So it's pretty huge there. I got to high school and started just hanging out with friends at mountain bike and went to the races. And my first year, there was probably, and it grew a lot. The first year was the NorCal League. There's probably 700 people there on a weekend. And it kept growing each year. And by my senior year in high school, it was split up. The state was so big. There's obviously SoCal right. and NorCal. And then the NorCal yeah. League got so big, they just split that up into like the southern part of NorCal and the northern part of NorCal. And there was literally 1,000, 2,000 people showing up.
That's just
like tons of
incredible.
People.
Incredible. Yeah.
The races are a little different than what you see at a World Cup.
Oh, sure. But it's racing.
It's perfect for beginners.
Yeah.
It gets tons of people into the sport. It's just so big in California.
Yeah. And that was one thing when I moved to California that I found interesting is I found out, you know, all these kids started with Nika. And, like, I never had Nika. Luke never had Nika. And we, you know, we would travel to these, like, local races called Southeastern Regional Series.
Circuit.
And, I mean, Luke and I raced back when we were little
yeah.
boys.
I started racing. Jerry and I used to race each other all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
So yeah. It was like, and I know they created this junior expert category, and it was, you know, on a good day, it was 12 kids. And Luke and I were usually up front, diving it out. And we were racing each other.
That's awesome. I didn't realize y'all were racing against
yeah,
each other all the time. That's
and,
great.
You know, we'd travel, you know, 14 hours, I mean, at least I would, to a race each weekend. And then I come over here, and they're like, yeah, Nike was great and raced 1,000 kids the other weekend.
drove 30 minutes.
It was 30 minutes. I'm like, wow.
That must
like,
be nice.
A little longer than 30 minutes. It's like 2 hours for a long
LA
time. Yeah, 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 whatever. But yeah, that's something that was crazy to me and also just great to see.
It was also pretty crazy just the caliber of the riders coming through Nika, even with a lot of riders maybe didn't necessarily start in Nika, but they just do it for the weekends for fun and kind of be their home course. But names everyone kind of hears. A couple of the riders went to the road, but tons of people that have been riding for the U.S. national team over the years. And
how long did it take for you to be converted from a roadie to
about the first race?
Yeah,
yeah,
that's great.
What do you think it is that Nika does that gets so many kids involved? Like for people listening at home that may be interested in like helping make something happen in their local area. Like I grew up, I did like maybe my freshman year of high school, I did like a local high school series, but it was like very, very elite focused. Like it wasn't like super beginner friendly. Like the trails were very technical and I don't know, like there were no bikes to be borrowed or anything. Like what does Nika do that you think makes it so entry level friendly that's getting thousands of kids to show up?
Honestly, I don't think it's that entry level friendly. I think they're kind of working on that. The cost of equipment they don't cover, mm-hmm. and everyone knows that a bike is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple schools in California that got donations, mm-hmm. pretty big donations to get a couple people in. But I think just breaking it up into so many categories, having kind of smaller categories just to make it a little bit more friendly.
Would you say that the courses are friendly to like non-race bikes?
Yeah, at the beginner level, you don't need the nicest bike.
Okay.
You definitely saw as it went into like the varsity category, people were showing up on teams like Bear, Whole Athlete, with the race bikes that they're then racing across the U.S. and across the world.
Mm-hmm.
But on the beginner level, it's not critical at all. People are just there having a good time. There was one school, I forget what school it was, they had a t-shirt that they wore all weekend, and it said something along the back of, like, no cuts, no bench time, like some other phrase.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That's cool. Some of these bigger schools had 50 people showing up.
Yeah.
Some of them had started mountain biking that week and were going to the race.
Oh, that's cool.
And to answer your question about the growth in my area, in Alabama, basically letting kids know. I mean, a lot of people just didn't even know about it.
Yeah.
Sure.
And
well, I didn't know it could be fun either, because I know we got a league in North Carolina, and my brother was like really into it, and he's a freshman, so like our team kind of revolved around him. He kind of put it into play, and as soon as he was riding it, you know, and doing stuff at school, like putting posters up, then people started realizing that mountain biking could be fun, because you know they see pictures or whatever from the last race, they're like, oh, that looks kind of cool, doing jumps and wheelies. A lot of people just think it's wheelies, but that's not.
Surprisingly, very few wheelies.
It's actually against NICA rules.
No way.
According to NICA rules, both wheels have to stay on the ground.
It's kind of like posting up is against USA cycling rules.
That seems silly.
Eli, your hands on the bars.
In my experience, it should be avoided at all costs.
There's lots of pros out there that can't do wheelies. So.
You're off the hook now, though.
Steven Unger.
Oh, gosh.
Ooh, shut up. Yeah.
Well, I didn't say that.
Yeah, but if they know about it and they start it, I mean, a large percentage of them will stick with it because it's just so fun.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you can go ride, and it's a lifelong sport, and you can even be competitive. So, yeah,
it's a lot cooler than most other sports.
Yeah.
It's definitely something different.
Not an opinion. It's around. Straight fact.
Yeah.
I've been there.
So if you only have one bike, I'm assuming it's a full suspension.
Yeah.
Top fuel for sure.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah,
the old track top fuel. I've been on a hardtail before, and I don't care to go back, so.
I've been on a hardtail before. That's so funny. How long have you been riding?
They're racing against each other when they're 8.
Yeah, you're saying that's a full suspension when you were 8?
No.
Oh, okay.
Definitely not.
Okay,
my first bike
was
out of the garbage.
Sorry from the garbage.
My first bike
here.
Was a Trek.
Top fuel.
Trek top fuel.
Only the best.
26. No.
20. What was 20 inch.
It was a Trek something.
Well, see, with this
way,
I'd like a Trek Fat Boy or something like that.
Yeah.
Something like, I could.
It was a 24
inch. I don't think mine had a brand on it.
24 inch wheel, the hardtail.
And my second bike was a Kmart Blue Light Special. It was a Honda. It was a Honda.
Did
it have a motor?
No.
Did you know enough to know if it was actually put together correctly?
Yeah, it wasn't.
Well, see, with the reason I ask is like, man, some of those courses, if doing it on not a full suspension seems like it'd be rough. But then that's one less thing you have to worry about, because I know, you know, our guys just always like, one lap on the hardtail, one lap on the full suspension.
Yeah.
What are we gonna race this week? Yeah.
I've been running the same exact setup this entire season.
Same tires, same everything.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I change the tires occasionally, but to the same thing.
What's the key for this course? So I guess when people hear this, race will already be over, but Mount St. Anne, difficult already. Then we had all this rain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Although it seems like it drains pretty well.
Rocks don't drain.
Yeah, the rocks don't.
Really?
No.
There's no drainage holes in the rocks.
No, they stay very slick.
But even like, you don't think by tomorrow it'll be? You think it's
no, because overnight it'll be humid, first of all, and second of all, probably mist will still roll in on the mountain. And all that mud that's been tracked onto the rocks will just stay moist, and it's like grease. So those
peanut butter.
Yeah.
Well, we can hope that it gets more peanut buttery, but it's like that one, that little section of not wet enough and not dry enough.
Right.
Might be wet enough after training stopped.
Peanut butter, it depends on the peanut butter you're talking about, I guess.
Sammy.
Yeah, is it like Justin's peanut butter, or is it like
Jif
like
creamy?
Really
chunky. Jif creamy would be good on the rocks.
I think it's pretty creamy here. It's mostly
biscuits.
Sand, not
it's
like rocky.
Sand, yeah.
So that's gonna be more Justin's-esque. I don't know if anyone eats Justin's peanut butter, but it's very kind of
dry.
Well,
you always get the oily peanut butter at the top.
No, that's, this one doesn't have dangerous. It's just dry.
Well, that's kind of what it's like. It's like it hasn't been mixed up.
That's right.
Yet.
Mm-hmm. So that's like grease. Yeah. But like Jif would be pretty good, I think. Because yeah. it's more tenacious and viscous.
Belgians are going to love this conversation. We're talking about different kinds of mud.
Yeah, but I mean, we were standing at La Beatrice for a little bit now, and I mean, riders were going down left and right.
Do you think that's the...
Lame.
Yeah. The,
I don't know what...
I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know what they're doing.
I'm not on that train, but...
conditions are slick.
No, but I hope I'm
it
not
seemed like
train.
I was over at the Patriot, or I don't know what they're calling it. It's...
La Patriot.
Is that the rock?
Yeah, the rock roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing was slick.
There are definitely people spending a long time over
there. We saw some guy, just lots of guys, just slide right off the rocks, hit the rock and kind of break a little too hard and just ice.
I was at the bottom when I was filming, and there was this little like sapling tree, and then there was some women just like right into it. And I was like, all right, well, the tree held. I'm still moving. Because it was, because like the crash pad, even like 3 feet from the tape, still had some mud marks, the perfect tire marks. And I'm like, all right, it's not a good spot.
It gets to stay clear.
Yeah. But you think Beatrice, that's the toughest?
I would say so. You know, the other places,
just
I feel like you can, so the rock roll part or whatever you guys are calling it, that to me, that's more of a skill section than Beatrice. Beatrice is just kind of, everybody is going to slide. And so it's always kind of scary just because I'm not used to something I can't ride carefully. So you kind of just, you go and sometimes it doesn't work and sometimes it does, it seems like, so.
Is this, how is this course elevation-wise? I mean, like everybody talks about the technical aspects of it, but it seems like it's pretty good climbing as well, or is that
very,
not the
very
case?
Very steep.
Yeah.
Probably the steepest.
Depends on what you mean by good climbing.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
it's steep in a lot
I guess
of it.
Comparative to other World Cup races.
Yeah, there's a lot of it. That's for sure. Good climbing is flat.
So this is sort of a mix in of climbing versus technical, as opposed to, you know, some of these other courses we've seen where it's all just climbing.
Yeah. Well, it's it is. I mean, it's really steep. So like, there's pretty much nowhere where you're going flat except through the start finish.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like the only 0% grade on the course, probably.
Yeah.
So it's a different. I mean, it's probably a climber's course as long as the climber's good at descending.
Yeah.
But you know, like a course like Nova Mesto might favor a heavier rider. Still, is you know, there's a lot of skill involved there, but just a slightly different build.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's probably close to Albstadt in terms of climbing, but just technicalities way off.
Yeah.
So I was talking to this first group that we had in there, and they were kind of lamenting the back of the field starts and how that really dictates how your race is going to go even before it starts, because you're 2 minutes in, or not even that, a minute in, and you're hitting that that bottleneck and then walking your bike and all that kind of stuff. You know, guys have been at the other end of that. What's the experience like? What's the field like racing in these World Cups, you know, second, third row?
Well, it's hairy.
that's mainly my question, because again, you know, and as I talk to these other guys, you know, our experience from cyclocross is really, it's, you know, my favorite story, Joe Dombrowski races for Canada on the road. He once told me, he was like, yeah, I remember this race. I was kicked, elbowed, knocked off my bike, and that was just in the starting grid. But
yeah,
it seems like it's
nuts. And in the World Cups, it's just that's like the highest level of like aggression that you really get. So definitely during the start, you
do you feel like you've changed as a rider for that you've sort of adopted, had to adopt that and become more aggressive when you're in there, and
absolutely,
just sort of
for sure.
Absolutely. So your elbows are always wide, and sometimes it's just like you have to reciprocate the aggression, which is not really how I was brought up racing. So like when I would race in the Southeast, there would be, you know, the hole shot would be important, right? But there were like 3 8-mile laps for you to figure out the rest of the positions.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if someone is going faster, you let them by. If someone's going slower, you go by them. But that's not how it works here at all. The start's a blitz, and from there on out, it's like, if you get too far back, you're walking up the entire Beatrice climb, for example, and right. down it, for that matter. So,
any French or German phrases that you've learned from being in those situations?
well, in Novo Mesto, I heard some American phrases from Luke. Oh. he was starting probably a row or two behind me, and yeah. we were right beside each other, and you know, it's just luck. I mean, to put it simply, and a rider went down in front of Luke and caused a pile up. A rider that was probably being a little dumb.
It was an Italian dude. I got this thing with the Italians, they always just cause unnecessary crashes, and it's always right in front of me, I swear. I did have some English phrases.
So you know, you hear that's awesome. You hear carbon crunching and you hear Luke with his American phrases, and then he had a great race that race. I mean, probably 2-3 laps in, he came flying by me up a climb, and you know, once it strings out, it's a lot more. You can definitely race a lot easier.
Well, and of course, like Novo Mesto especially, it's passing throughout the entire lap, which is sweet.
It's so nice and wide.
Yeah. Here, it definitely funnels down quite a bit more, so a start might be more important here than it is at Novo Mesto.
Right.
Alpstadt was the same way. You know, it was really tight. So as soon as you hit that first climb, I mean, you guys were just... I mean, we were all strung out up and down the hill.
Yeah.
Not a lot of places to go.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to just push people off their bikes, which, like I said, it's not really my style.
Yeah.
I don't like
that. Yeah, like Novo Mesto. I mean, look at, like, Vanderpool in the elite race, who crashed out at the start and then...
Moved up quite a bit.
To like eighth. Yeah. Just insane.
That was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Awesome. So what are y'all's off season plans? Still riding?
Yeah. Well, if I'm honest, it's probably a 24 pack of Bud Light and not a lot of other activity.
I'm all in favor of that. There is nothing wrong with that as a plan.
My girlfriend actually just got back into the same time zone as me yesterday. So
yeah.
We're finally on the same time. So my plan is to go down to Virginia, see her, and probably just lay low for like a week.
Cool.
And I'll probably actually do some cross racing this fall.
Awesome. Good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Sounds like a good time, hopefully.
Yeah. So. Where are you going to be located?
North Carolina, Virginia.
Okay.
We've got a good scene in North Carolina.
Totally. But you need to, October 21st and 22nd, you got to come to DC.
Yeah, well, that's actually within spitting distance, so
all right.
That'll probably be on my agenda.
Just hit me up. Let me know. All right. Maybe it'll work out.
Yeah. As long as you got a 24 pack, we're good.
We can do that. What do you got planned, Jared?
Yeah, I think I'm going to head back home, you know, for a little bit and, like I said, there's a lot of new riders, and I may take them out and teach them a few new things.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Make me look bad.
Actually, I'm glad that your two goals don't mix. So, young rider, take them out, 24 pack. No.
Yeah, so go back home, and, you know, I also raced cross as a junior a lot. And I mean, I did the Numer World Cup.
Yeah, I remember seeing your name out there. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so when... That was probably my first experience on, like you talked about earlier, with the start grid.
Yeah.
I think I did a cycling news article about that. I know I did. first cycling news article. But yeah, that's what I plan on doing, is going back and, you know, doing some cross as well. I may do nationals or something big like that. But mainly, you know, take all the notes I've written down from this year, especially the World Cups, and, you know, try to get faster.
Cool.
And, you know, that's my main goal is to come into next season, you know, try to make the improvements Luke has.
Awesome. same invitation, DCCX. Come out, race and cycle across.
See you there.
Yeah, see you there, Luke.
I'll split the case with you.
Then I'll be doing some collegiate mountain biking, working on my budding Cat B downhill career.
Nice. Oh, so, excellent. There you go.
Up and coming.
Man, from roadie to downhiller. This is going to be
collegiate.
Still.
Then once the snow rolls in, do a little bit of skiing.
Sweet.
And then hop on the trainer a bit.
Nice.
Or you could do cyclocross and not have to ride the trainer.
I don't know.
Yeah.
My coach doesn't like cyclocross. Well, he says it's too much intensity at the wrong time of the season.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, it's not like cyclocross and not thinking that it's good for training.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that's another good point. Jerry and I are both coaches as well. So
yeah.
I'll be all through the off season. I mean, I'm coaching now, too.
Yeah.
That's a constant source of time commitment. So.
Yeah, I'm working closely with
Drew Edsel.
So we're not 100%, you know, laying down the knowledge. We're definitely taking in the knowledge from Drew and
that's awesome.
Our experiences in the World Cup and working with athletes. So
I like seeing that. That's really good. Well, thank you all for taking the time and talking.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And it's been a pleasure. Have a good race tomorrow.
Thanks. We'll try our best.
Yeah.
Stay up right.
Be slick. That's for sure.
Slick and muddy. How much money? Yeah.
All right, there it is, Bear Development Team. Hey, follow along with those guys at Bear Dev Team or Beard Ev Team, if you like that pronunciation, at BEARDEVTEAM. Also, BearDevTeam.com. I'm heading to Italy, last World Cup mountain bike stop. Then I'm heading back. We're doing a clinic the next week over Labor Day, and then it starts. It's not coming anymore, cyclocross. It's going to be here, and we are excited here at CX Hairs HQ, and the TDDTIE Traveling Circus will start the week after Labor Day in Rochester. I need all y'all to head up to Rochester. Go race that race. It's pretty awesome up there. We're going to be doing a live podcast from the venue. We're just going to pick a spot. We're going to set up some speakers and we're going to talk cyclocross. And we want you to be there for that. After that, we're taking the show out to the Midwest, going to Iowa for Jingle Cross, going to Trek for Waterloo World Cup. And then, we may actually be in Chicago between those weeks. And then later in Cincinnati, Charm City, DCCX, all over the place. But yeah, it starts in Rochester. Cross is coming. Cross is here, cxhairs.com. Oh, quickly. cxhairs.com is going through a revitalization project. We are picking up the pace there. Got some help on the site. I am so excited about that. I think that you all are going to be as well. We're going to have a lot more content, a lot more regularly. And it's going to be sweet. I cannot wait for this season. Okay, I got to get out of here. It's now past midnight, and I need to be up in a couple hours. At CX Hairs on Twitter and Instagram. Feedback at cxhairs.com. We'll talk to you later.